Every addiction starts with a soft choice. It's a quiet compromise. What's the harm? Not hurting anybody. But very few things are as they appear.
I guess I'm here today to communicate that there is an alternative to the pervasive view that this is harmless and this is just the way it is, and that there's no way out, that we are just as a nation supposed to just continue to approve the endless destruction of moral boundaries. That we're just supposed to sit back and say, yeah, that's fine, as marriages continue to fall apart, as people continue to be consumed by addictive life, that we've got to do something about that. If coming to a camera and being candid and saying, this is what God's done in my life, the plan of this was to destroy me and my marriage and our future, and God's turned all that around.
Pornography is the graphic, explicit depiction of sex, and it's meant to stimulate and to arouse.
Pornography is images, sexual images, that robs people of intimacy, of joy, that paints a false picture of what and who women are.
Emotionally, when a man looks at pornography, he feels alive. That woman on the image is saying, I want you, you're wonderful, you're incredible. The reason why pornography is the most addictive thing in the universe is that it allows a man to feel like a man without requiring him to be one.
It's a fantasy, it's fake, it's not real, and it hollows you out. Anything that has life, life is stripped from it when it comes in contact with pornography.
We're created as men and women to enjoy the gift of sex and the gift of sexuality within a sacred, covenantal relationship. And whenever we step outside of those boundaries, there's going to be a diminishment to our own souls. And so really it diminishes. It lessens our capacity to love and to be human.
It infects every group, every culture, every ethnicity. It does not discriminate in any way. And pornography is just that powerful, that it is able to break into any group. It's the kids from little suburban white America. It's the kids from the hood in, you know, down in the ghetto. It's kids from it's immigrant families. It's everybody. It's people are being impacted by it.
Pornography kills. Pornography destroys. Pornography strips men and women of their dignity. Pornography violates love. It prevents intimacy, and that's the case in my life.
Exposure to pornography was 10, 11 years old. A neighbor I guess it was a neighbor, had left these out. We lived in a small community and left them out in a barn. Big stack of them in the barn. And I found those out in the middle of nowhere, and that was the beginning. I remember the impact of that on my whole psyche and this fascination with this world that no one was talking about, but obviously was going on.
In high school, I remember being with a friend on a trip to a summer sports camp, and that friend stole, actually shoplifted, a Penthouse magazine, and it felt like gold. It felt like this person had just lifted the Hope Diamond out of that store, and we were carrying around the most valuable possession that we had. What happened was that pornography started to feed and nurture my heart, my emotions, and I could not live without it.
My journey into darkness and secrecy really began when I started my own business, and I had my office in my home, and we had a computer, and I remember just being curious, typing in keywords just to see what would come up, and it didn't take long, you know, to where there were some pretty graphic and explicit images, you know, right there before my eyes. And it just captivated me.
I live with a tremendous sense of paranoia. I just knew that someone was going to see me. Someone's gonna see the pastor going into this adult bookstore. And so I always looked over my shoulder. I was always afraid. I always kind of walked, I always lived my life with a sense of uneasiness. There was no peace there, because I always felt like somebody's gonna find out, and then my story's gonna be out. And I just continued this kind of pattern, this hidden secret. My wife didn't know. No one knew my deep, dark secret.
Never in my wildest dreams did I or could I imagine that years later, 20 years later, 25 years later, that I would be engaged in all kinds of sexual acting out that I did not want to do. And not only for religious reasons, because I grew up in a home that was nominally Christian, and God was someone who I was really afraid of, and I didn't have any beliefs per se that this was wrong. It was just that it felt shameful to me. And somewhere deep inside of my own heart, I had this shame and this anxiety and this dread that if anybody ever found out about this, that there's no way that I could live through that, that there's no way that I could be loved or accepted or wanted based on the things that I thought about and the things that I did.
Even as I went to seminary, where I thought, seminary, there's no way I'll be able to stay away from the pornography in seminary. They'll have the internet service will be filtered. It'll be, you know, this is seminary. There's no way. But in reality, it wasn't that way. In fact, at seminary is where the addiction really began to take root. That's really where it became the darkest during those years at seminary.
Playing the part, going to church every Sunday morning, sitting up in that choir loft, singing those songs, listening to those sermons, teaching that Sunday school class. But in the back of my mind, I was filled with guilt. And it just became overwhelming. I was tired of living a lie. There was no peace. I had no rest. I was living a double life.
If you had looked in on my life, you would have said everything was working. We had the right cars, the right home, beautiful family. You'd see us at church on a regular basis. You could have said, hey, this is working. But the reality was that behind the scenes, I had already begun a departure from that. And once I had begun, there was no coming back because of the secrecy of it. And it began to grow, it began to grow. And as a result of that growing, the job was affected, home life was affected, my self-respect was affected, dignity was affected, all those things began to impact our life.
Came away from seminary, still holding the secret, still realizing that I'm internally, I'm really still in crisis over this thing. It's really, there's a darkness to me, but no one knew, and I didn't want anybody to know, so I go back out into ministry and serving as a pastor, and the addiction really begins to emerge stronger. I had resisted and just wanted to change, but the change wasn't happening. You know, I'm like, God, can you just take this thing away from me? Just take it away. I'll do whatever.
Sets an impossible appetite and an impossible standard, and it steals from the true beauty of what marriage is supposed to be. You know, it's the perfect theft of growing old together. Who wants to grow old together in a culture where all we honor is what's young? When what we're supposed to really want and desire is, you know, this perfect thing over here physically, and we miss the whole point of marriage.
What women want most of all, and it's the dichotomy of the industry, is that women want to be beautiful and desired by the man that they love. And it gets twisted and in the industry, and the women are portrayed as, I want you, and I've got to have you. And so the men are attracted to that. But what that woman behind the camera really wants is unconditional love, and for one man to say, I love you and you're beautiful and I accept you, and she's hurting just like the men that are addicted to it are hurting. She's in a prison as well.
For me, being a Christian and struggling with pornography, was extremely difficult in that there was an enormous amount of guilt. And that guilt was driving me away from every relationship that mattered in my life. First, number one, was my relationship with God. Number two, was my relationship with my wife. Number three, my kids and my friends. The guilt had caused me to withdraw from those relationships.
It affected us in a very deep way. It affected the way she saw herself, affected the way that I saw her, definitely affected the way I saw myself. When you know your behavior is contrary to your belief system and to the God that you know, at some point that conflict demands a resolution one way or the other. You're either going to give in and go for it and sacrifice everything for the pixels on the screen, because that's all it is. When you shut the power off, it's gone. Or you make a commitment to what's real, what's a real human sitting next to you, and commit to whatever it takes to make that work. And we had to make that decision together.
Because of the power of the internet and the availability of it, there's this whole new breed of folks that would never, and these are not people of all ages, they would never drive to a bookstore across town in a seedy part of town and risk going into a bookstore. Pastors, Christian leaders, ministers, school teachers, people that would think, I would never do that. And now it's coming to them, and the anonymity that it affords allows them to engage in this behavior that they wouldn't otherwise imagine that they would ever get addicted to beyond maybe just dabbling in it once or twice. But they do become addicted because of that anonymity. They don't have to put forth the risk and risk being shamed or embarrassed or caught. And then the accessibility is you can get it anywhere.
So when you're 12 and 13 and you're not married, you think that when you become married, that this whole habit you've created for yourself will just go away because now you'll have a sex partner. You'll have somebody there that can, whenever that urge comes up, you've got your in-house fix, right? But the problem is that it's not actually a sexual experience, it's a fantasy experience that your body gets trained for. So now the reality of the marriage isn't a fantasy. And so you've got this built-in conflict with your marriage partner. If we're talking about a Christian perspective on marriage, then it's incompatible. Yeah, and you've got a habit built into your core personality of whenever life is too much, I escape through, you know, pick the door, whether it's alcohol, whether it is porn, whether it's whatever it is, it's the release valve when I just can't take anymore. As a believer, follower of Christ, that should be running to God. That should not be running to fantasy. So all I can tell you is my own story. I'm not here to convict you. That's the Holy Spirit's job. I'm not here to do a sales job on you and win you to my way of thinking. All I'm trying to do is say this is the life that we lived. And I know I'm not the only one living it because I get the phone calls all the time from guys saying, I'm coming apart. I'm sick of dealing with this. I hear it before, during, and after the marriage is falling apart. Young guys coming to me saying, I don't want this in my life because I know God's preparing me for marriage, and I don't want it in my marriage because it goes with you. Whatever we've lived, we bring to the marriage. It didn't go away with the ring and rice. Suddenly everything's pure and we move on. No, the life we lived before, we brought in.
The number one fear for men with a pornography struggle is that they will be exposed. Which is to say another way that they will feel shame, that someone will see me for who I really am. I felt that I would lose absolutely everything. At the time that that friend and mentor and professor asked me that question, have you been unfaithful to your wife? The reason I lied, I knew I'd lose my job. There are pastors that if they go to someone, they're afraid they'll lose their job. There are men who, if they were to share this and it got out, they're afraid their wives would leave them.
I was risking so much for pornography. I was risking so much for something so little. I was risking being seen by my children. What if, imagine if my children were to walk in on their dad looking at pornography on the computer.
It wasn't until one evening I was, we had moved and I had my office doors closed and I thought my wife had gone up to bed and she came downstairs and opened the door and there it was on the computer screen. And I just, as I think about that night and I remember the look on her face.
I knew the degree of duplicity I was living. And I just assumed automatically that she would leave because I grew up in a divorced home and it's everywhere. You know, divorce is as common as Starbucks now, so it's just a common procedure for someone to say, I've given up on you. So I automatically assumed that she'd say that, oh, well, okay, well, you're a loser. And I guess at that point in my thinking, I thought I was the only one supporting a multi-billion dollar industry. You know, it's not sane thinking. And so my greatest fear at that time was that I would tell her and she'd say, oh, I can't believe this, you know, which she did. But that secondarily she'd say, and also I'm done with you and I'm taking your daughters and I'm walking. And that I was going to be left at this abyss to manage myself. think it's why a lot of men don't say anything about it, because they figure they'll be left alone with something they already know is too much.
I know that same struggle of not wanting to, and so desperately not wanting to go there. And that was my life. Along the way, my wife had discovered my problem. My secret came out. One night before we were going to bed, she said, "Hey, I discovered something on the computer. I discovered this stuff on the computer is pornography, and I had nowhere to go. I was, you know, it was me." She wept. She cried. I mean, we were both crying. It was a very painful thing, obviously, for her and me both. And I said, "Yeah, I'm gonna deal with it. We're gonna get through this, and I'm gonna deal with it." But in reality, I wanted to, I really did, but it wasn't. It didn't change for me there. I was still in bondage to pornography. So it made it worse, because now she would catch me again, and that was probably the most painful thing, because I'm breaking that trust all over again. I'm pouring salt in the wound, so to speak, over and over again, and she's just crushed. She had every right to be angry and to be bitter and to be disappointed with me. And she finally came to a point where she was convinced that she needed to leave. She needed to leave me.
Our first daughter was born, and I remember looking at her, holding her in my hands and looking at her eyes and realizing there's a transparency in her eyes and her spirit that I can't connect to. There's something in me that has shut down. I should be able to connect to the degree that she's transparent, because those eyes are just, I mean, you know what I'm talking about. If you've held a baby in your arms, a newborn, there's nothing there but this beautiful transparent soul that God created. It's, oh, wow, and I can't connect. So what's going on in my heart, you know? And so Shelly had gone out of town to see family, and I just felt like the Holy Spirit said, "This is the day you call her and you tell her." Oh God, you know, I can't do that. And I have to be clear that through this whole process, God was faithful to still communicate with me, to still pursue me. It's what He is. He is gracious. He is long-suffering. And I guess I had shut Him out too. He continued to pursue me. So I thought, well, I just had this sense that if I don't do this today, I'm going to cross that line where there's the expense of this is going to be exponential. The destruction is going to be even greater. So I called her and told her, and because she was out of town, and I wanted to do it in person, but the bomb went off, and the truth was out.
It took me by complete surprise. I didn't have any clue that it was even an issue. I got angry, and I got angry at him and at men in general.